Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and you're listening to the 12th and my finally shrinking Great Awakening Map series. We're down to the last two episodes, and I hope that you're enjoying them even more as we go along and as I get a little bit better handle on some of these solo episodes. This episode will focus on ancient aliens and what I'm calling the Earth Rising section. As always, I'm truly grateful to be here speaking with you today, and I hope you'll continue to engage with us in the exchange. You can always email me about other interesting topics and guests, and you can use the contact form on our website, Awakened Exchanges, or you can contact me directly on Twitter at Awaken Exchanges. As you probably know, I'm currently taking a road trip around the western half of our beautiful country, and I'm including some cool videos and photos from my stops along the way. I'm truly grateful to have this opportunity and to share it with you as I scout for a future Austin area home and explore some cool sites along the way. I hope you're enjoying the photos and looking forward to the next series and interviews, some recorded along the way of the trip, actually, and I hope that it all leads to great things for the podcast, the vapes, and the eventual ARC community. Things are definitely heading in the right direction, and as I've mentioned before, I'm going to continue to use these mindfulness techniques to look at my life from a perspective of gratitude. I keep reminding myself how lucky I am to be here today, and how lucky I am for the future that's coming. I'm truly beyond grateful that you're all here to join me along the way, at least virtually, and share in some of these experiences, so thank you. We're on the last two episodes of the map, but if you are just joining us or if you haven't already seen it, you can still find a high-res copy of the map in our show notes or on our website at Awakened Exchanges, as I mentioned before. And if you're checking out the Telegram channel or Twitter feed, you can see the highlighted version that I've made to the map as well, showing how I'm grouping these topics together, as well as any of the collected threads that I've made for this series. I hope you're still enjoying the threads, and if you need the link to the Telegram channel, it's in the show notes as well as on our website, and I hope that you engage with us in the exchange over there. And I know that I've already given the disclaimer, but we are talking about a lot of conspiracy theories in this series, so here it is again. Keep that in mind when you decide how to weigh all of these topics and these people as they give their stories. Before we get to the ancient aliens, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. As always, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content that I can. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please take a look at our Patreon page where you will get access to exclusive content and deals. There are already bonus videos available, and more are on the way. As for our other sponsors, Awakened Vapes was the first of the Awakened brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other fantastic products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but definitely not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube, or follow us wherever else you're listening. And if you can, leaving a review or comment on Apple Podcasts really does help spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products, made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just the beginning of what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state. Their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner coming back for more. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges. It's episode number 3. The Caramel Corn Company is bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. Made with premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches, and completely gluten-free. Their flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, spicy sriracha, white morsel macadamia, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, chocolate drizzle and raspberry caramel apple. I can't say enough about how delicious this caramel corn is. It makes a great gift any time of the year. You can find them for sale in Portland area market of choice locations, and hopefully again online soon when they get stocked back up. Please visit www.caramelcorncompany.com for more information today. And remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awaken Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vapes since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines, and no prescribed pills helped alleviate the symptoms. Having only tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. Despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban, and then a global health crisis with COVID, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with the custom blended effect profiles. Check back at www.awakenedvapes.com for any updates, and you can always email us about wholesaling or white labeling opportunities. We're back again. This is our 12th episode and the next to last in this series. Are you ready to tackle this insanely wide-ranging ancient aliens and Earth rising section? Well, we're going to go ahead and start with all of the healing and related terms that I could gather up. The first phrase is simply holistic healing. And well, according to healthyhildegard.com, holistic healing is the practice of health and wellness that considers the entire person and all of the internal and external factors affecting them. Holistic healing seeks to maintain or restore balance among and within the various dimensions of the individual, rather than focusing on a specific condition or even an illness. Holistic healing addresses all parts of the individual and their life. Holistic healing considers the whole person by including their mind, body, spirit, and heart in treatment considerations. As such, holistic healing can be used to describe many different types of interventions or practices as long as they hold this in perspective. I think that's a fairly concise definition, so I'm moving on to the next phrase, which is cancer cured. Brief and to the point, some people already believe that Big Pharma is withholding a cure for cancer so that it can keep treating the disease, but who would do that, right? That's just darn right greedy, ain't it? Is Big Pharma, and we just know about the Sacklers who are getting away with a few fines after knowingly promoting the opioid epidemic with their OxyContin pills and such. Anyway, Activator X was a new term for me, and according to bodyecology.com, Activator X is a fat-soluble substance similar in structure to vitamin A. Dr. Weston A. Price was a dentist who was fascinated by diet and nutrition. He suspected that the Western diet of sugar and processed flours and pasteurized milk was to blame for disease, decaying teeth, and early mortality. In the 1930s, he traveled around the world and visited thriving primitive cultures to learn their nutritional wisdom. His classic book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, is a must-read by anyone who is interested in improving their diet. Dr. Price studied isolated, non-industrialized peoples to establish the parameters of human health and nutrition, discovered this new substance, and found that Activator X helps your body absorb and use essential minerals. Apparently, it's present in grass-fed beef, and especially in the butter of grass-fed beef, as well as in some seafood. It's at this point that I realized how much I know my diet is already lacking right now, And there are things that I could be putting my effort into learning about that would probably be more useful than this. So I moved on to the map's next claim that, quote, rat fish liver oil decalcifies the third eye. Okay, I totally thought that he meant raw fish and that it was just a typo, but it really is rat fish. It is one word, not two like the map has it, but still, weird name I had never heard of. Anyway, while RosetaUSA.com claims their ratfish oil has a unique nutrient profile, unlike any other cartilaginous fish, any of the decalcifying your third eye information all had conflicting accounts of which oil to use. Fish oil, ratfish, codfish, flaxseed. There's a whole bunch of random stuff that basically they're all essential fatty acids, so maybe that was the key. I wish I could ask 5D if he had any specific reason for listing some of these things, like this particular oil, but sometimes I think the answer might just scare me. So next is the quote, eat live foods, drink fluoride-free water, detox your body, raise your vibration, and meditate. That whole quote sounds like fairly good advice, unless that fluoride is just strengthening our enamel and not calcifying our pineal gland. The rest, though, eating whole fruits and vegetables, meats, detoxifying yourself, and meditating all sound like positives to me. Fairly close to that phrase is organic food, listed right above the phrase non-GMO, which seemed redundant since GMO wouldn't or couldn't really be organic, right? Or could you grow genetically modified plants organically? And I suppose you could, but I don't know. I felt like I'm repeating myself, just even saying these kinds of things too much. Like, I'm repeating myself. Did you know that I might feel like I'm repeating myself? You guys are probably going to be glad when this last episode is over next week, huh? Anyway, I really hope you are still enjoying these. I'm going to move on to the next phrase, sound healing, which is mentioned right next to the Om symbol. The best definition I found for sound healing actually comes from blog.mindvalley.com/sound-healing, where it says that sound healing is the process in which a practitioner uses music, including emotional, psychological, spiritual, physical, social, mental, and superficial, to improve the health of their patient. Sound healing therapy improves many facets of the patient's life, including emotional and social development, cognitive and motor functioning, and psychological and psychiatric health. Healing with sound happens in a number of ways. Patients listen or sing along, improvise musical acts, meditate, chant, and play musical instruments. Some practitioners subject the patient to specifically crafted sounds to induce positive brain waves. I find that definition particularly interesting because the chanting of Om is said to do a similar thing, as it is supposed to tune your vibration to the initial sound of the universe. And while I do believe that there is a lot more to sound and vibration than we currently know, I've got a lot to cover, so let's get into the energy and technology terms, the next subsection this week. I'm going to defer to a Healthline.com article that I'll be including in the show notes to discuss our first topic in this section, the Rife machine. So what is a Rife machine? That's R-I-F-E. Well, according to Healthline, an American scientist, Royal Raymond Rife, invented the machine, which produces an energy similar to radio waves. Rife's machine was built on the work of Dr. Albert Abrams, who believed that every disease has its own electromagnetic frequency. He suggested to doctors that they could kill disease or cancerous cells by sending an electrical impulse identical to the cell's unique electromagnetic frequency. This theory is sometimes called radionics. Rife machines are Rife's version of the machines used by Abrams. Some people claim they can help cure cancer and treat other conditions like Lyme disease and AIDS. In the 90s, people began selling Rife machines as part of a multi-level marketing scheme, where they used customer testimonials and anecdotal evidence to support claims about the machine. Rife machines haven't gone through the same rigorous testing procedures as other cancer treatments have, and there's no research to suggest that they work currently. Researchers have started recently experimenting with radiofrequency EMFs to treat cancer, and they've concluded that low-frequency electromagnetic waves do affect tumors and don't impact non-cancerous cells. Research is still in the early stages, and there haven't been any human studies, but the studies do use different radio frequencies than those generated by Rife machines. Very interesting to be in the infancy of this research. It's definitely got a lot of potential. So, if we can use sound to destroy cancer, what about sound levitation? According to a Wired.com article that I'm also including in the show notes, it works like so. Two horns vibrate at 22,000 times a second, firing sound waves into a pocket of air beneath these two devices. When these two waves interact, you'll get what's called a standing wave, so they'll cancel in places and they'll reinforce in others to create nodes and antinodes, says Ben Moore of the lab's Advanced Photon Source Facility. Those particular places where they cancel and you put an object in there, it can levitate. These vertically arranged pockets cancel the pull of gravity, so Ben Moore can add tiny balls to the air between the two horns to form a levitating string, or even spray water and watch the fluid coalesce into droplets inside the pocket. The effect of the little balls hovering and vibrating in midair is quite mesmerizing, but beyond the entertainment value, acoustic levitation is helping Ben Moore and his team do science. They're suspending pharmaceuticals and watching how the molecules interact. By pointing the most intense X-ray source in the Western Hemisphere at the acoustic levitator, what we're able to do is look at the atomic structure where all of the atoms are arranged. That, he says, can give us an idea of what conditions you need to actually make a more effective pharmaceutical, such as how to make the body more readily absorb it. The conspiracy theory is that sound levitation was used in making megalithic stone structures like Stonehenge and possibly in the construction of the pyramids. Have we lost a much more powerful version of this technology to the ravages of history? Right now, we can't levitate objects that are very heavy at all, so it would have to be a pretty big step that we missed, but it's definitely not beyond possible. I don't have a satisfying answer for that, so I'm going to get into Wilhelm Reich and his orgone energy theory. According to Wikipedia, orgone is a pseudoscientific concept variously described as an esoteric energy or hypothetical universal life force. Originally proposed in the 1930s by Wilhelm Reich and developed by Reich's student Charles Kelly after Reich's death in 1957, orgone was conceived as the anti-entropic force of the universe, a creative substratum in all of nature comparable to Mesmer's animal magnetism from 1779, the odic force in 1845 from Carl Reichenbach, or to Henry Bergson's Elan Vital in 1907. Orgone was seen as a massless, omnipresent substance similar to luminiferous ether, but more closely associated with the living energy than with inert matter. It could allegedly coalesce to create organization on all scales. The simplest, smallest macroscopic units called bions in orgone theory, to macroscopic structures like organisms, clouds, or even galaxies. Reich argued that deficits or constrictions in bodily orgone were at the root of many diseases, most prominently cancer, much as deficits or constrictions in the libido could cause neuroses, according to Freudian theory. As for the orgonite pyramids, according to orgonitecrystal.com, they're supposed to help to filter and balance energy fields in our environment, and can aid in strengthening your energy body by converting low-frequency energy into a higher frequency that is more beneficial for life forms including yourself, pets, and plants. It sounds good, but I can't say that they're going to do anything for you because the science just doesn't exist. Next are the numbers 3, 6, 9, followed by the quote, "If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration." I'm fairly sure that this has to do with the 3, 6, 9 manifestation techniques attributed to both Nikola Tesla and Neville Goddard, but most likely having nothing to do with either of them. It's fairly in-depth for a topic, but it's mostly about the law of attraction. As true believers in the law of attraction know, it's not just a positive thinking thing, but it's about the effort and energy directed into your life and what you want. I'm including an article from Medium.com that explains the process in more detail, but the gist of it is that you take a one-sentence affirmation, hopefully it takes you about 17 seconds to write down, and write it out 3 times in the morning, 6 times in the afternoon, and 9 times before bed. Keeping it in your thoughts, your mind is supposed to help manifest it that much easier and faster. Maybe I'll give that a try here soon, give you some anecdotal evidence when I manifest this podcast into hundreds of thousands of downloads. I guess it makes sense that Nikola Tesla is mentioned right beneath that, as he was said to be the originator of that technique, but his name is also followed closely by wireless energy, something he is definitely more known for. I think that Tesla is getting some more name recognition as of late because people like Elon Musk, who obviously named his car company after the storied inventor. But when I was a kid in the 80s, I was kind of considered the odd one for knowing who Tesla was, whereas everyone was always talking about Edison, of course. The two were definitely rivals, but as Edison was known for working his scientists extremely hard and giving them little to no credit, Tesla actually did the work himself, saying that he received completed instructions in his head, and he was apparently able to manipulate those machines to make them function and troubleshoot problems before he even put them together. That's another level. How about we take a quick look at unified field theory, which is listed right above Nassim Harriman and the Resonance Science Foundation. So what is the unified field theory? Well, I think of it as being fairly synonymous with the theory of everything, but I think technically it's unifying the four basic forces into one theory. The goal would seem to be the same, however, explaining how the universe works in the most fundamental way possible. I highly suggest you looking into Eric Weinstein and his geometric unity theory. He unveiled this on the Joe Rogan Experience just a few weeks ago on April Fool's Day, and that's so he can take back the fools, not because he is a fool, so keep that straight. You can find it at geometricunity.org. And as for Nassim Harriman, he's actually the founder of that Resonance Science Foundation that they mentioned, and is a very interesting person himself. According to their website at resonancescience.org, the Resonance Science Foundation is a global research and education nonprofit organization committed to the unification of physics and science as a whole. Founded by physicist Nassim Harriman in 2004, the RSF team of researchers and educators have developed a formal unified view of physics. These findings have implications and applications to revolutionary technologies that transform people's lives and the world as a whole, helping to overcome some of the largest challenges facing the world today. Further, Nassim Harriman has spent more than 30 years researching and discovering connections in physics, mathematics, geometry, cosmology, quantum mechanics, biology, and chemistry, as well as anthropology and archaeology. These studies led Harriman to groundbreaking theories, published papers, and patented inventions in unified physics, which are now gaining worldwide recognition and acceptance. I definitely think that he's worth a look into. I would love to have him on the podcast someday. He's probably a little bit out of my range right now, but who knows? Give us a few years, right? That brings us back to another map repeat, the Schumann resonance. That's listed in bold above a smaller phrase that just says increasing. And as we talked about this in episode 19 on the Great Solar Flash, I believe, it doesn't appear to actually be increasing at any kind of a rate, but rather fluctuating within a range. So I'm going to go ahead and leave that one right here. Feel free to listen to that Great Solar Flash episode if you want to know more. Now, the Nazi Bell has been talked about in a sideways fashion through our Admiral Boda information and the like, but now it's directly mentioned right above anti-gravity, and then in tiny letters they list a fair distance away from this is Die Glocke, which is literally translated as the bell, so I'm not sure why it's not closer, but anyway, it can also be combined into this Nazi Bell information here. According to Wikipedia, the Nazi Bell was a purported top-secret Nazi scientific technology device, secret weapon, or Wunderwaffe, first described by Polish journalist and author Igor Witowski in The Truth About the Wonder Weapon in 2000. It was later popularized by a military journalist and author, Nick Cook, who associated it with Nazi occultism, anti-gravity, and free energy research. Mainstream reviewers have criticized claims about Die Glocke as being pseudoscientific, recycled rumors, and a hoax. Die Glocke and other alleged Nazi miracle weapons have been dramatized in video games, television shows, novels, and the like. It really surprised me to hear that they say this concept originated in 2000, as I swear I had heard of it well before then. Maybe I'm having a Mandela effect moment, but maybe it was just some sort of other unsolved mystery show or something from my childhood that I couldn't quite locate about just Nazi UFOs and not necessarily the Nazi bell. I'm going to have to just let it go for now. The next phrase is Hanabu 3. I hope I didn't butcher that, but that, according to UFOFandom.com, the Hanabu 3, that's H-A-U-N-E-B-U 3, was part of the Hanabu series of experimental aerospace craft built by NS Germany as early as 1939. I'm assuming NS is just Nazi. Why they didn't spell it out there, I don't know. But under the direction of an SS panel of developers, Hanabu is apparently now the generic ufologist term for any UFO created by the Nazis. Maybe I was thinking of these rumors and associating the Nazi bell as any Nazi UFO, like I mentioned. Or I just, you know, got it mixed up. We hear a lot of information when you start researching topics like this, and as the map proves, you can repeat yourself without even realizing it. The map obviously had to list chemtrails, though, but there are so many different theories that I don't dare tackle this topic and try to say what 5D was thinking when he put it right where he did. That's going to allow me to move right into a massive cluster bomb of a topic. HAARP. That's H-A-A-R-P. I'm also not going to really tackle this topic in depth because of the number of conspiracy theories that surround it. Most of them center on it being able to influence the weather somehow, though. And according to Wikipedia, officially, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HAARP, was initiated as an ionospheric research program jointly funded by the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy, University of Alaska at Fairbanks, and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's right, DARPA. It was designed and built by BAE Advanced Technologies. Its original purpose was to analyze the ionosphere and investigate the potential for developing ionospheric enhancement technology for radio communication and surveillance. As a university-owned facility, HAARP is a high-power, high-frequency transmitter used for study of the ionosphere. What did they discover with those studies? Could they really trigger a weather event like a natural phenomena, such as earthquakes or tornadoes with this machine? Let's just say that it's highly speculative at best. That brings us to solar weapons, which is listed right above Pine Gap, Australia. I could find nothing linking the two, to be quite frank, and I know that Pine Gap has a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding UFOs, among many other things, simply as it's a joint base between us and Australia. As for solar weapons in particular, the closest thing that I could find was the sun gun, or heliobeam, which, according to Wikipedia, is a theoretical orbital weapon which makes use of a concave mirror mounted on a satellite to concentrate sunlight onto a small area at the Earth's surface, destroying targets or killing through heat. And because we've already thought it up, and it's not that hard of a science to pull off, it definitely does make me wonder if anyone's already tried it and sent one into orbit somehow. Jewish space lasers? No, let's not go there. The next phrase, Russian pyramid science, does have some interesting information out there, and I'll be getting mine from Gaia.com to share with you at least for this week. Make of it what you will. That said, Alexander Golod, which is G-O-L-O-D, I believe that's how you pronounce it, but I could be mistaken as well, has been examining pyramids since 1990 in Russia. He claims that these pyramids have the power to eliminate viruses, treat cancer, and increase the electrical resistance of pyrolytic carbon. He has led many studies on the effects of these pyramids in different environments and situations, and in some studies he has found that pyramids have had agricultural effects, such as purportedly increasing the yield by 30 to 100%, among other results that he noted, such as when he was testing his military radar units, which indicated massive amounts of ionizing radiation coming from the tip of the pyramids. Power in pyramids is nothing new, and we've been drawn to them as a species for thousands of years, no matter where in the world you look. So, it's intriguing, but there's just no hard science that I know of yet that backs any of these kind of claims. So I have to mention that the map mentions stargates, but since we already covered these back when we covered jump gates also in episode 27, checking it off the list, and moving on to the last section in this tech section, which is listed in bold, and that is the BRIC Alliance, B-R-I-C, which has Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, et al., listed after that, with the implication that they're securing free energy technology written directly beneath that as well. I listed them here instead of the Earth Rising section, as it sounds like those would probably be the nations that good old Corey Gump, Corey Good, would claim are in the Galactic United Nations to appease their desires to be included, while the technology is still being kept from us as a whole. At least until after the Great Solar Flash, right? Wasn't that supposed to have happened already, though? Makes me wonder. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to aliens. It's always a fun topic. The map actually lists ancient aliens in a big, bold, circled section, which is then also surrounded by a lot of terms that the map seems to be trying to link together. I'm going to do my best to cover this in some sort of understandable kind of way. It starts in the upper left where the Giza complex pyramids are listed and depicted, right above the phrase Ascension Machine. Everyone listening to this podcast should have heard of the Giza pyramids, but what is the map saying with calling it an Ascension Machine? Well, first I want to say there's always been some speculation that it might have been linked to some sort of Egyptian mystery school, similar to the Eleusinian mysteries in Greece. Now, there are still places that are purportedly teaching the ways of the mystery schools, but unfortunately we don't really have a thorough account of what they really used to do in history. So, the thought is that it was something similar to what the Freemasons' teachings are about, teaching you about life and not fearing death, while also utilizing some sort of mind-altering substances. It's a fascinating topic, but one that is a lot more speculation than fact right now. So one of my favorite topics of antiquity, though, is Göbekli Tepe, which I'm very grateful that the map mentions, so I had an excuse to spread the word just a little bit. I am continually surprised by the amount of people who have not heard of this, so I even considered doing a deep dive on the subject, but since that's probably down the line, I'm going to give the mostly Wikipedia version of what this site is. Göbekli Tepe, which translates to Potbelly Hill in Kurdish, is a Neolithic archaeological site in southeastern Anatolia, Turkey. The tell, or artificial mound, had a height of 15 meters, or 50 feet, and was about 300 meters, or 1,000 feet, in diameter. It's approximately 2,500 feet, or 760 meters, above sea level, and it includes two phases of use, believed to be of social or ritual nature, by site discoverer and excavator Klaus Schmidt, at least. Its oldest layers date back to the very beginning of the Neolithic and the pre-pottery Neolithic A, or roughly the 10th to 9th century BCE. I want to interrupt there for a second and point out that this roughly lines up with the 10,500 BCE date that Graham Hancock and others have signaled to be the second impact event, which was roughly the end of the last ice age. Can you start to piece together why I might be interested in learning more about the reestablishment of agriculture and society? I say reestablishment because it's highly unlikely that all of this information carved into these structures just popped up fully formed out of nowhere with seemingly no preceding events. And no offense, but there are people who think that it was deliberately covered up to preserve the carving so well and leave us a message for further generations. In fact, as the earlier section, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute, goes, the carvings actually get less ornate and less precise. It's that de-aging that we actually see a little bit in Egypt as well. Back to the description, though. The younger phase of Göbekli Tepe belongs to the pre-pottery Neolithic B, or the 9th to 8th millennia BC. And during that early phase, known as the 10 millennium BCE, circles of massive T-shaped stone pillars were erected, classified as the oldest known megaliths, some 3,000 years older than the earliest cities of Mesopotamia, and more than 200 pillars and about 20 circles are known as of May 2020. And that's all through geophysical surveys. Each pillar has a height of up to 6 meters or 20 feet, and weighs up to 10 tons. That's 20,000 pounds. They are fitted into sockets that were hewn out of the local bedrock. In the second phase, belonging to the pre-pottery Neolithic B, the erected pillars are smaller and stood in rectangular rooms with floors of polished lime. The site was abandoned after the pre-pottery Neolithic B period, and excavations have been going on since 1996 by the German Archaeological Institute, but large parts still remain unexcavated. In 2018, the site was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and I'll try to include some pictures in this week's thread, but I truly suggest everyone read and learn about this fascinating site. The next thing we're going to look at is the Bosnian Pyramid, which is listed directly above the name Samir Osmanagic. And that appears to be the man responsible for all of it. I'm going to go ahead and stick with the Wikipedia article where it says that the Bosnian Pyramid Complex is a pseudo-archaeological notion to explain the formation of a cluster of natural hills in the area of Vjosko in central Bosnia and Herzegovina. Since 2005, Samir Osmanagic, also known as Sam Osmanagic, a Bosnian-American businessman, now based in Houston, Texas, has claimed that these hills are the largest human-made ancient pyramids on Earth. His claims have been overwhelmingly refuted by scientists, but he has proceeded to promote the area as a tourist attraction. Direct study of the site by geologists, archaeologists, and other scientists have demonstrated that the hills are a natural formation known as flat irons, and that there is no evidence that they were shaped by human construction. The European Association of Archaeologists has condemned the so-called Bosnian pyramids as a cruel hoax. Along with various other scholars, they are also concerned about damage being done to genuine archaeological and paleontological sites in the area, including a medieval Bosnian castle, Roman fortifications, and even some more ancient remains. Osmanagic initiated excavations in 2006 and has since reshaped one of the hills, making it look like a stepped pyramid. the academic community has called for the government to end funding of excavations and disruptions of the site because of the damage to true archaeological resources. Many scholars have noted that the claims have been used for serious ideological, political, and economic gains by various factions within Bosnia. Although Osmanagić's claims have been completely disproved by the scientific community, the Vjosko area in recent years has attracted pseudoscientific enthusiasts, and the so-called Bosnian pyramids and the Ravni tunnels have morphed into New Age pilgrimage sites. By June 2016, Osmanagić had completed an archaeological park at one of the hills where he attracts volunteers for constructing botanical gardens. Meditation sessions have been held at the site, and it has been noted that tourist traffic has aided the economy of Vjosko, located near the front of the war that destroyed so much of the country in the late 20th century. And while I personally understand that the area could use the tourist boom, it sounds like it's mostly helping good old Sam the Pyramid Man, not the local citizenry. So that's going to go ahead and take us to crop circles, which the map seems to link to light orbs and ET light ships. And there are lots of theories about crop circles, but I want to go ahead and mention that Astonishing Legends, a podcast that I listen to when I get the chance, is doing a series on crop circles right now as I record this. They offer a lot of very good information in it, and while some people may consider their podcast a little dry at times, the hosts are really entertaining, and the research is top-notch. I recommend their series if you want to hear a good deep dive, but I'll just say that, yes, there are known hoaxes out there. There are also reports going back hundreds of years in this area, and not everything looks like it's been hoaxed. I'm not saying it's aliens, I'm just saying that we don't know what's causing them. Again, go listen to Astonishing Legends. They've got a great series on it. April 2021, somewhere in that range, all right? The next thing the map seems to associate with ancient aliens is the Anunnaki, with the quote, "Those from heaven to earth come." The map also seems to link the Book of Enoch, the name Elohim, and the Ankh symbol to this crowded little area. The Anunnaki, for those who haven't heard of them, are a group of deities worshipped by ancient Sumerians, Akkadians, Assyrians, and Babylonians. In the earliest Sumerian writings about them, which come from the post-Akkadian period, the Anunnaki are the most powerful deities in the pantheon, descendants of An and Ki, the god of the heavens and the goddess of earth. Their primary function was to decree the fates of humanity. Wikipedia goes on to say that since the second half of the 20th century, they have been the subject of many pseudo-archaeology and conspiracy theories that there are so many that they tie into that I'm just going to go ahead and leave it there and move on to two of the most influential books on the topic of ancient aliens, both of which are listed in the section, and the first of which is Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken. I consider this particular book a lot more speculative. Wikipedia says that it is a book written in 1968 by Eric von Daniken and translated from the original German by Michael Herron. It involves the hypothesis that the technologies and religions of many ancient civilizations were given to them by ancient astronauts who were welcomed as gods. The first draft of the publication had been rejected by a variety of publishers. The book was extensively rewritten by its editor, Wilhelm Rogersdorf, in order for it to even get published. The second book listed in this section is Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock, and that is a personal favorite of mine that I read many years ago. Now, in the initial reading, the theories fit the evidence that he had at the time, which just suggested that we didn't know what could have led to this. It has been updated to fit what seems to me to be a lot more likely of a scenario of some unknown ancient Earth civilization. I highly recommend reading his book and researching Graham Hancock yourself. I may even get more into him and his theories on a deep dive in the future. I didn't know that ESETI, which stands for Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence, was even on the Great Awakening map until after I had been planning a camping trip there. It was supposed to take place in early 2020, but we all know what happened with COVID, so then it was going to happen before the road trip to Austin. However, their website seems to be down for booking, and they're not returning any phone calls. So the ranch's owner, who is listed on the map, James Gilliland, is followed by ET contactee, and in quotes, ESETI Ranch, Mount Adams. What does this all have to do with aliens? Well, what about nearly nightly sightings of UFOs? Go take a look at their YouTube channel. I'll be doing a podcast from there and sharing it with all of you sometime this year. Whatever is going on at this location is at the very least intriguing, so you'll have my full report as soon as I get the chance. And although unrelated, CSETI, which is C-S-E-T-I as opposed to E-C-E-T-I, is the Center for Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's listed right next to that ESETI I was just talking about. Now, CSETI.org now redirects to SiriusDisclosure.com, which is the current home of Dr. Stephen Greer's disclosure projects. Their about page says that they are interested in the development of a peaceful relationship with extraterrestrial intelligence, which has been visiting planet Earth for decades, if not centuries. Part of the reason for the ETI presence, that's extraterrestrial intelligence presence, has been kept secret is that they say the first question would be, how are they getting here? They're not using fossil fuels, so that would imply that it is through zero-point or quantum vacuum energy generation systems, and it is those energy systems that we want to develop and bring out to the general public so that we may have a world of pollution-free, sustainable abundance. I'm going to go ahead and just leave that quote there for them and move on to CE5. CE5, which is listed as an abbreviation right next to the fully spelled out Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, is just that. A close encounter of the fifth kind is a UFO event that involves direct communication between aliens and humans. It's also the name of a Stephen Greer documentary that I haven't made the time to watch yet. I think that about covers the phrase, though. One of those two things will probably give you a lot of information to research. The last thing that I'm going to include in this subsection is the Vril Society. That's V-R-I-L. They were, according to scarenormal.com, which is probably supposed to be pronounced scare-a-normal, but it's just scarenormal.com. The Vril Society was a secret group of women that claimed to have kept their hair long in order to act as an antenna to telepathically channel communication with other alien races. The society is also believed to have come from an ancient Aryan race and had the belief that the New World Order was unavoidable. The map lists Channeling ET Contact directly under their name, and now I know why. I'm constantly amazed at the percentage of people that wholeheartedly believe in things like this based on the word of another hairless ape. I personally think that evidence would be nice to have, or at least some personal experience to go on. That takes us to the next subsection, the Earth, which is actually listed on the map with a quote above it that seems to imply that we are a master school for spiritual evolution. And while I like the idea, and it is definitely one that I have heard before, Earth as a school for the soul, the rest of the terms in this section are from all over. I've combined them together so that I could do the best I can explaining them, and I'm hoping that these subsection categories make these episodes go a little bit easier for everybody. Now, the precession of the equinox, also known as the Great Year, seems to be linked to the 25,900-year pole shifts. The precession refers to the gradual shift in the orientation of Earth's axis as its rotation in that cycle of approximately 26,000 years. And I understand the concept of the Great Year and this wobble, but I'm not sure how that wobble is supposed to be responsible for pole shifts. Does a larger wobble over time indicate that the poles are getting ready to reverse? I do think that pole reversals are a very scary thing that most people haven't even heard of, and no one really understands. But they have happened multiple times in our history of this planet, and if it were to happen today, would most likely be a fairly devastating event. How about the concept of solar system warming instead of global warming? The phrase is actually listed like it's going to say global warming, but global is actually crossed out with solar actually replacing it. The map goes on to say that all planets in the solar system are heating up, and then it also seems to link some sort of dense energy cloud to that heating up. So I don't know if our solar system is supposed to be passing through some dense energy cloud that is also contributing to global and or solar system-wide warming, but I do know that man-made processes are definitely changing our climate here on Earth. Now, could they be helped along the way by other cycles or factors we don't know or understand about? That part, I'm willing to say, is possible. We don't really know. There's a lot about our planet that we don't know, and we take that for granted. Next on the map is the phrase 10 meter plus stone circles, Africa, which is listed right above the name Michael Tollinger. If you go to michaeltollinger.com, you'll see this quote: "Welcome to my website. I urge you to keep an open mind as you navigate the content. I connect the dots between widely diverse subjects to remind us of how everything is connected. Remember that we are the makers of our own reality. The nature of our reality is very different from what we imagine it to be. Things are not as they seem, and everything we have been taught is a lie. The history of our planet and our origins as a species is very different from what most of us can imagine. We are a species with amnesia, undergoing a rapid awakening from a long, deep state of unconsciousness to rediscover our significance as humanity and our critical place in all of creation. My discoveries of the vanished civilizations of southern Africa have provided some of the critical missing pieces of the great human puzzle." If you read his website or any of his other claims, they do have more of a ring of science than just plain science fiction. But then it gets bogged down into heavy speculation, which is all we can really do at this point. I'm going to say that I am at least a little intrigued by the dots that he connects. Next, the map links the Nazca lines to underground cities. And while most of us have at least heard of the Nazca lines, the Nazca are a South American people with striking accomplishments. They made remarkable irrigation systems of underground aquifers, aqueducts, and wells, as well as fine polychrome pottery and textiles. Some believe that the Nazca lines, massive geoglyphs scratched into the earth, in case you haven't seen them yet, might have been the result of ritual pilgrimage. But why? We just don't know. As for the underground cities, I have the idea that those are probably passageways from their aquifers or irrigation systems, and we just are misinterpreting those, maybe. As for the next phrase, Chinese pyramids, that refers to pyramidal-shaped structures in China, most of which are ancient mausoleums and burial mounds built to house the remains of several early emperors and their imperial relatives. About 38 of them are located within a 25 to 35 kilometer radius northwest of Xi'an, or the Guangzhou Plains in Shaanxi province. I'm probably butchering all of these names, but you already know that. So, the most famous is the Mausoleum of the First Qin Emperor, northeast of Xi'an, and just about a mile, or 1.7 kilometers, west of where the Terracotta Army was found. I'm sure the map wants to link them to more mysterious things, but I'm going to go ahead and move on to Puma Punku, which, according to the ever-handy Wikipedia, is part of a large temple complex or monument group that is part of the Tiwanaku site near Tiwanaku in western Bolivia. It is believed to date to AD 536, and Tiwanaku is significant in Inca traditions because it is believed to be the site where the world was created. In Aymara, Puma Punku means the door of the puma. The Puma Punku complex consists of an unwalled western court, a central unwalled esplanade, a terraced platform mound that is faced with stone, and a walled eastern court. At its peak, Puma Punku is thought to have been unimaginably wondrous, adorned with polished metal plaques, brightly colored ceramic and fabric ornamentation, and visited by costumed citizens, elaborately dressed priests, and elites decked in exotic jewelry. Current understanding of this complex is limited due to its age, the lack of a written record, and the current deteriorated state of the structures due to treasure hunting, looting, and stone mining for building stone railroad ballast, as well as natural rope, as well as natural weathering. Yanaguni, Japan is the next thing the map lists, right over the phrase undersea temple. And right next to those is what appears to be a single linked phrase that says ancient builder race and giant undersea passageways. According to historicmysteries.com, the Yanaguni Monument is an enormous underwater rock formation that covers an area of about 60 by 50 meters. It was first discovered in the mid-80s by a scuba diver looking to observe hammerhead sharks. The claim is that it was carved by man thousands of years ago, and that's one they can't quite prove. But there are some definitive angles, and it definitely does look deliberately done. I did find an assertion that it might have been a map of some sort, like a deed to the seas or something, but I couldn't figure out why it would have been made like this myself, and following the details was getting a little foggy there, so do some research yourself if you'd like. I'm going to go ahead and let those go in favor of the next map quote, which is the planetary grid system and ley lines. That's listed in bold. And the planetary grid would fall along the ley lines if this all works as it seems to in my head. The thought is that if vibration is the behavior of energy, then the Earth should exhibit a vibrational signature. The Becker-Hagens planetary grid purports to show the pattern of this unique energy force. Many ancient cultures built mysterious structures in specific locations, a lot of which falls along these lines. The claim is that the energy that collects in certain locations along these lines may be the reason as to why. It's also claimed that they might be the reason for locations like the famed Bermuda Triangle, where who knows what happens when planes and ships go missing for no known reason. We do know that reports of missing ships and aircraft definitely go up in those locations, but besides that, I've got no real facts to report on. So, fascinating and should be studied. Again, vibration leads to cymatics. Cymatics makes patterns. Patterns can be seen all over. So maybe this planetary grid, these ley lines, are the vibrational patterns of the Earth. I could see that as being potential. Definitely not going to rule it out wholeheartedly like some other things I've talked about on this series so far. The Norway spiral incident in 2009 is the next thing we're going to go ahead and look at from the map. I'm going to be including some pictures of these in the pin threads for the episode as well, but it was a real incident. The Wikipedia version is that it was visible from and photographed from northern Norway and Sweden on December 9th, 2009. The spiral consisted of a blue beam of light with a grayish spiral emanating from one end of it. The light could be seen in all of Trøndelag to the south and all across the three northern counties which compose northern Norway, as well as from northern Sweden, and it lasted for about 10 minutes. According to sources, it looked like a blue light coming from behind a mountain, stopping in midair and starting to spiral outwards. A similar, though less spectacular, event had also occurred in Norway the month before. Both events had visual features of failed flights of Russian, RSM-56 Balava SLBMs. And the Russian Defense Ministry said shortly after that such an event had taken place on December 9th.
Or is that what they want you to think?
Well, yes, that is what they want you to think, or they wouldn't have said it. But that doesn't mean that it was anything more sinister. It certainly seems like I'm saying who knows a lot in this series. That said, it's just as likely that it's a failed missile test as they put out there. Because we also know Russia doesn't like to say that they failed in anything, so why would they otherwise?
Because they captured aliens.
Oh, no, fuck. I don't know. I can't come up with a good reason. So, next, the map also touches on the claim that the Ark of the Covenant is located in Ethiopia. At least it was supposedly there until last year, when, according to an article that I'm including in the show notes, which comes to us from the New York Post, there was at least 800 people slaughtered in an attempt to steal the artifact in November. It wasn't widely reported until February of 2021, almost 4 months later, and since no one is allowed to see the Ark except its caretaker, and no one can confirm what happened to its caretaker, we don't know if the attempt was successful or not. How did it supposedly get to Ethiopia in the first place? Well, the Kebra Nagast is the best known claim, and while it is often said to have been composed to legitimize the Solomonic dynasty, which ruled the Ethiopian Empire following its establishment in 1270, that's not quite the case. It was originally composed in some other language, Coptic or Greek most likely, then translated into Arabic, and then translated into Ge'ez in 1321. It narrates how the real Ark of the Covenant was brought to Ethiopia by Menelik I with divine assistance, while a forgery was left in the temple in Jerusalem. And while I don't like to believe anything without evidence, that's just going to go ahead and leave us stuck right where we were once again. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and touch on this next concept at least twice, because the map repeats itself just a bit, as I know we've already talked about. So, the concept I'm referencing, Nazi breakaway civilizations. Just above one of the mentions, you can see Hitler hideout in small letters above a large and bold Argentina, and a pointed direction to the city of Barrioche, which is Barilhoche, which I know I butchered the pronunciation of. This refers to the theory that Hitler had killed doubles in his bunker and escaped, at least temporarily, to Barrioche in Argentina. From here, it is said they may have gone to Antarctica and maybe even into space. That's how we have Nazi reptilians and Jewish space lasers at the same time. Right, Marjorie? Anyway, the last thing in this section is Project Paperclip, which was actually Operation Paperclip, but was a real and secret program led by the U.S. intelligence, in which more than 1,600 German scientists, engineers, and technicians, such as the famous Wernher von Braun and his V-2 rocket team, were taken from Germany to the United States for U.S. government employment, primarily between the years of 1945 and 1959. The map lists the NASA logo with the year 1958 listed right next to it, and right above it, the Nazi SS lightning bolts. The name Wernher von Braun is under that with the quote, "Top SS Nazi scientists / engineers brought over from Germany to start NASA," which may be a bit of a simplification, but is not technically completely inaccurate. That does finish off this section, and Antarctica actually gets its own section and drawing on the map, so it's going to go ahead and get a section here as well. I'm going to start with the out-of-place terms like the ancient builder race and pyramids both being listed again. This time, however, they at least seem to be tangentially related to another topic I hope to do a deep dive on someday. Atlantis, Lemuria, and Mu. Now, I would love to have Graham Hancock on to discuss the dual impact findings from approximately 12,500 and 10,500 years ago. When you start thinking about that and linking the Atlantis legends to the end of that ice age, which does also line up nicely to the time that Plato described, then you start to realize that we've basically been this form of human for almost 200,000 years. So what did we do with that 185,000 years of missing human history? Do you really think it took us that long to get to the Stone Age? I think we're highly resourceful creatures, and I want to know what kind of historical amnesia we've really got going on. Did the burning of Alexandria take an alternate history from us? Is the Vatican holding on to some evidence in their archives? Who knows is certainly seeming like the phrase of the day. Hell, I'm repeating myself as often as the map is now. I suppose it's as good a time as any to go ahead and take the top term in the drawing and talk about the pre-Adamites. The map lists that over the phrase elongated skull giants and the quotes crash-landed 55,000 years ago and origin of cabal slash Illuminati slash NWO. Would this be part of that forgotten history I just mentioned? I personally think they're trying to jam a few square pegs into round holes and still believe that the elongated skulls, while interesting and that we don't know why they started doing this, they are still human skulls. They were elongated for unknown reasons, but by known methods. As for the Illuminati, would a cabal have lasted for 55,000 years? Can people maintain secrets and power that long? I really don't know. I think the elite are an ever-evolving class myself, and there may be linkages through the times for hundreds or thousands of years, but it's still ever-evolving, just like the rest of the planet. As for the pre-Adamites, according to Wikipedia, the pre-Adamite hypothesis, or pre-Adamism, is the theological belief that humans existed before the biblical character Adam. Pre-Adamism is therefore distinct from the conventional Abrahamic belief that Adam was the first human. Advocates of this hypothesis are known as pre-Adamites, as are the humans who they believe existed before Adam. I don't really know how to break this down scientifically, especially as I believe Adam and Eve are psychological representations of us evolving out of our primitive primate habitat and into human consciousness. That's probably not going to be a popular opinion, but it is just an opinion. I'd like to change my mind if you can prove to me or provide me new evidence to consider. So, I don't know. This section also includes the quote, buried slash crash-landed pre-Adamite spaceships and ancient ET ruins, which also goes back to Antarctica either housing a pre-Ice Age civilization or being the home or partial home of Atlantis. And while I don't rule it out as a possibility, please show me the evidence. We've just got nothing right now. So I'm going to go ahead and most likely butcher this next word, but the New Schwabenland is the next term listed down, and it's also known as New Swabia, which is, or was, rather, a disputed Antarctic claim by Nazi Germany within the Norwegian territorial claim of Queen Maud Land. My guess is that this is where the people are claiming the Nazis went to build their underground base and eventually flee into space. Maybe after Operation High Jump in a few minutes, we'll know a little bit more. Next, we have the quote of advanced technology R&D back engineering, where it then lists Lockheed Martin covert excavations and implies visitations to Antarctica's research facility by Buzz Aldrin, the Pope, John Kerry, and other unnamed high-ranking elites. This would probably fit in nicely to the Skunkworks talk we had in episode 26, but it's all just more conjecture, though. It seems to be that because, as the map says, ice shelf melting is exposing ET craft and ET civilizations, that these elites are taking an interest down there. Some say that this is where another Nazi breakaway group was started, as I'd mentioned earlier, complete with underground bases and apparently back-engineered UFOs, anti-gravity, and free energy. What they've been doing down there since World War II? Well, leaving our planet, if you ask the conspiracy theorist. Which isn't an awful segue into the last phrase, which I had just mentioned, Operation High Jump. The map lists, right over Operation High Jump, the name Admiral Byrd and the year 1947. It then says, in quotes, "The largest U.S. naval defeat led to the creation of the military-industrial complex." According to CoolInterestingStuff.com, Operation High Jump has become a topic among UFO conspiracy theorists who claim it was a covert U.S. military operation to conquer alleged secret underground Nazi facilities in Antarctica and to capture German Vril flying discs, or Thule Mercury-powered spaceship prototypes. This has always been denied by the U.S. military, but new declassified pictures from Operation High Jump show some very odd details that do not fit in with the official story. The images? Well, nothing really looked unusual to me. I'm not saying that the government would tell us that they were chasing Nazis down to Antarctica when they wanted to portray strength in having eradicated the menace and brought the war to a close, but I think that it's at least as likely that they were there for the real mission, which was officially to set up an American research base on Antarctica. Speaking of official, that officially brings us to our final section of the week, and to start off this week's miscellaneous stuff is the chemical structure for N,N-dimethyltryptamine. It's the very bottom left of the globe, which is then followed by the quote, "Everything you've learned in school is wrong." And while I haven't had a blast-off DMT experience myself, I am definitely looking forward to one at some point. And while we've talked about it in multiple episodes, I'm thinking most heavily in episode 24 if you want to hear more. As for the quote, "where everything we've learned being wrong," well, maybe technically in the sense that we can't really know anything for sure, quantumly at least, but I think that 5D means more about drugs and history. And in that sense, I do agree that we have not been taught objective truth by any means, and that we're taught a consensus history written by the victors and what Big Pharma wants us to know about drugs. So we're moving into a new age, and with that, the times are changing quite quickly. And it's going to be an amazing decade, one way or the other, to figure out how we go ahead and look at history and forge our new path forward. Next is the term OOPART, O-O-P-A-R-T, which stands for Out of Place Artifact. This is a term that I suggest you at least read the Wikipedia article on for yourself, as there are tons of pictures and interesting side notes. The most famous OOPART is the Greek Antikythera, which was most likely an extremely complicated astronomical clock. There have been a lot of misidentified objects and just plain forgeries that really cloud up the subject, though, so I'm going to go ahead and move on myself. The Iraq War is the next phrase listed here, and sadly, there are just too many possible reasons that I didn't really want to include it in the Earth Rising section or any other. So now I've mentioned it in the miscellaneous section. My best guess, we supposedly uncovered ancient artifacts of some sort, but I've heard so many rumors that my eyes just glaze over at this point. Since I do prefer to end on something a little bit more substantial, though, let's go ahead and take a look at the Piri Reis map. I'll be including a picture of it in this week's thread, and according to historicmysteries.com, the Piri Reis map is a world map created by Ottoman Turkish cartographer named Ahmed Muhyiddin Piri in 1513. The map has garnered attention because it appears to show an ice-free Antarctic coastline. If that is the case, then someone discovered and mapped Antarctica centuries before its reported discovery in 1773. The Piri Reis map was said to have incorporated the only known copy of Christopher Columbus's map into it. They go on to say that not only did the Piri Reis map of 1513 include excessive annotations and accurate depictions of the Azores, Canary Islands, and Atlantic Islands, not to mention Japan, but historians were amazed to find it included a depiction of Antarctica. However, Antarctica wasn't discovered until 1773, as I mentioned, so how could it possibly be on a map dated 260 years earlier? The mystery deepened further. Not only did the Peary Reis map show the coastline of Antarctica, but it displayed the proportions of the continent without its ice cap, which were only visible over 6,000 years ago. The Peary Reis map has proved to be an object of great debate and controversy amongst cartographers, researchers, and historians for decades. Is it proof of an advanced ancient civilization? Does it prove the history of our own civilization wrong? Or, as historicmysteries.com also points out, there's actually one final, even simpler theory. What many believe to be an ice-free depiction of Antarctica is actually nothing more than the South American coastline. Some researchers have hypothesized that Peary Reis simply ran out of room to draw on the gazelle skin, so he crammed as much of the South American continent in it as he could. Interestingly, Reis's notes back up this theory. In his notes, he states that this region is very hot and full of snakes. While these descriptions certainly wouldn't fit in with what we know about Antarctica, it could very well describe the Amazon jungle. So, all of this hoopla over coincidence? Yeah, most likely. I've included a reconstruction photo based on this theory in this week's pinned Twitter thread. Oh well, I hope that wasn't too disappointing of a way to end this week's episode, and I hope you're looking forward to the next and final episode on this lucky number 13-part series. I can't wait to finish it with the Q connection, and what fortuitous timing to arrive just as I finished watching the HBO documentary miniseries Q Into the Storm. Quite revealing. Hope to see you next week. Thank you again for listening to the next-to-last episode on the Great Awakening Map. I hope that you enjoyed exploring this section as much as I did, and that you're looking forward to the final segment as much as I am. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube, or wherever else you're listening, and if you can, please leave us a comment or 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really will help with visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again. Have a blessed day.